Joined now with Senate Majority Leader Richard Wardner. And which district are you out of? I always say Dickinson area, but what's the official way to, I guess, announce your district, if I could, please?
Well, I serve District 37, and it is Dickinson. It's in the city of Dickinson, yes.
Okay, great. And we're bringing him on today, Mr. Wardner, to talk a little bit about Hub City funding, which is extremely important when we're talking about the world of the Bakken and energy development. And, of course, the way these shale plays are so connected that it goes well beyond just North Dakota. That's what we found out during the recent Bakken boom. So let's maybe set the table a little bit here and just kind of get an overview of Hub City funding and what it's all about, so people can kind of have an understanding just of the overview of it, if you would, please.
Well, first of all, hub cities are very important. There are three hub cities that are out in the Bakken play. They are Dickinson, Williston, and at the current time. The idea and the concept for hub cities came in 2010, right before the 2011 legislative session. And Representative Bob Scarpa, who is from Tioga, was very disappointed that a neighboring city in his district, Crosby in Divide County, they got a much bigger allotment for their city, the city of Tioga. Of course, Tioga is in Williams County, which is with Williston. And so in the formula, the way the money was divvied up was that when the money came back to a county, then 45% went to the county for county issues, 35% went to the school districts in the county, and 20% went to the cities. Well, that 20% in Williams County had to be divvied up between Tioga, Ray, Glenora, Williston, whereas in Divide County, only Crosby and Noonan were basically the two communities, and so they got quite a bit more, and so he wanted to change, and that's where the concept of hub cities came along. And so they are funded differently, and they're not in that formula. They are taken out and funded separately. And so it was put into play. We convinced Governor Dalrymple that this was a good thing, and he put it in his budget. And so from 2011 to the current time, we have hub cities. What is a hub city? A hub city is a community of more than 12,000. They have to be over that. Second, when it came to funding it, we called it mining employment numbers, which meant they have to be directly involved in some type of job that is involved with the drilling aspect of the oil. And so those were the two main criteria. And of course, as I said, Dickinson, Williston, and Minot qualified. And that's where we were most of the time. We did deviate from that one time, and we used employment numbers from gas and oil employment. That one biennium did include some other cities. But we're back to mining numbers currently.
So if we go back to Governor Dalrymple and the years that this has kind of evolved, you've been pretty involved with it, obviously, with your representation, not only from a senatorial leadership position, but also just being in the thick of it out in Dickinson representing out there. What happened when there were some budget issues during the downturn and that sort of thing? And I know that a few of the cities, or Minot specifically, did not receive as much as they anticipated, and some other cities didn't receive too. And that goes outside of the hub cities. But speaking specifically to the financing part of it, and just over the last few years, kind of what happened there from your perspective?
Well, first of all, production was down and the price was down. So not only was Minot's allotment down with what they've got, but so was Williston, so was Dickinson. So we've had to struggle through the last biennium to make sure that we take care of the stranded debt. And remember that Williston especially had to do a lot of infrastructure for the city to take care of the people that were coming. You know, Williston grew from a community of about 12 or 13 up to over 30,000 people. Dickinson grew from 16 up to 27,000. Minot grew, but they were a bigger community and they absorbed it a little bit better, but they were still a part of it. But what had happened is that when the price of oil went down, the production went down, and these communities didn't get as much. And we've had to live with that. And so the amount of money that each one got this biennium is less than what they had gotten, for example, in the 13-15 biennium. That was where they really got money, and they needed it. And we also, during that time, we had a thing called the surge. Now, the surge helped the cities, but it also helped the counties and the school districts and the townships out there. And that money went for infrastructure. And I want to tell you that that was really a critical piece of legislation, because during the time of the surge, once they got that money, they were able to catch up. They were so far behind on infrastructure at every political sub-level that things were not working out very well. But that gave them the boost so that they caught up. And I want you to know, as we go out into the Bakken at this time, the road infrastructure, the highways, the county roads, the ones that are needed, are in good shape. And thankfully they are, because the industry needs them in order to mine the product. In other words, drill for the oil and to produce it. So there was a good investment by the state of North Dakota in order to bring home more revenue to the state and help everyone out.
You know, when you talk about the infrastructure, I remember some of those roads out in Dickinson specifically in that area when Highway 22 was just a couple lanes. And now, you know, obviously 5-6 lanes or whatever it is now in certain areas. It's a night and day. And then, of course, you got the bypass, I think, out in Watford City and the Killdeer, and just some of the infrastructure improvements on the roads that were, I think they're old muck roads, they were called, and then that sort of thing. So are we still doing some more major infrastructure improvements out there in the Bakken in terms of connecting these hub cities together? Just when I'm talking about the main arteries, are we still spending that surge money? Are we still kind of doing some of those, or did we get kind of caught up?
No, the surge money has pretty much been used up in infrastructure. As we speak today, I would say everything's in pretty good shape. They're working on Highway 85 from Watford City to Belfield. That is probably the last stretch that needs to be taken care of. They did put some turn lanes on 85, which made quite a difference. But I want you to know, when you talk about those highways, there was a time when there was someone dying at least weekly, someplace in the Bakken, because of the highways. You don't hear that anymore. Those roads are safe, but there's passing lanes every so often. It's made a whole world of difference out there. And we're very thankful that we were able to make that investment to take care of it. It not only helps the industry, it helps public safety. It brought back the quality of life. And I just want to say this about hub cities. Those three hub cities have now become very important. They're the gateway to the Bakken. We are now in a point where we're recruiting workforce. We don't have enough workforce out there. And those communities need to have a quality of life that we can draw families from other parts of the country that want to come and live in Dickinson, Williston, and Minot and work in the oil and gas industry out in the Bakken. And the more people we get, it's the better for the state. We are growing, and we do have families coming. And all you have to do is take a look at the rolls at the hospitals, and the birth rates are way up compared to what they used to be. So we've got young families coming, but it's going to impact our schools. And our schools, you go to Williston and Dickinson and Minot, we need to build new schools because the kids are coming. Not that they aren't in other parts of the state. As you know, West Fargo and Bismarck, they're growing too, And so the pressure is going to be on to take care of our K through 12 education infrastructure.
You mentioned about the lives and the quality of life, you know, to the tune of where people are not dying on the roads. That's an incredible turnaround when you think about it, because when I remember my first trip out in the Bakken was 2010. It was. And it was myself and the owner of Max Hardware. And we got on Highway 22 and we drove outside of Dickinson, and we did not even make it to the Dunn County line. And we had stopped and turned around because we looked at each other and said, we have no business being out here except for treating the oil industry like the zoo. We're just going out here to observe. And this is really dangerous. I mean, it was that dangerous because there was that many semis coming and going, and it was two lanes back then. We did not even make it. I don't know, how far is the Dunn County line? 5 miles? I mean, we didn't even make it outside of town. We turned around. And then when you go there, the improvements that have been made on the key parts to make the quality of life to where you feel safe are incredible. And now I'm starting to see the layering in of that second wave of, you get some nice main streets that I hear so much about, and, you know, the family oriented schools, and the new Watford City's got a gorgeous a new facility there, event center, and that's what I'm starting to hear more of, is the investment in these quality of life things that you're talking about, the entertainment and the hospitals and the emergency services, but also the new employees. Now, we're doing a lot of work down in Texas these days with the Permian and Eagleford, and we're hearing a lot of the same things up in the Bakken as down there, which is there's a certain level of employee that's coming into the energy industry, which is kind of eliminates that old nomadic worker of old. And so that's why the hub city funding and some of these quality and life investments are being highlighted. At least that's what I'm hearing. Senate Majority Richard Wardner, is that kind of what's happening here? The worker has changed to the tune to where they can now put a little bit of some roots in a community as opposed to the old nomadic worker.
Absolutely. You are right on the money on that. That's exactly what's happening. And, you know, and of course, in North Dakota, we're excited to bring young and new families into the state. And if they've got good employment and they make good wages, it's really a plus. So there's no question. Things are changing.
What types of things are you hearing from the public out there that they want to see for the quality of life? I mean, we're talking about, you know, funding and doing those sorts of things. So what are the people talking about when they say the phrase quality of life?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting you asked that. I went to the governor's Main Street Initiative. He had a summit here three weeks ago. And it's the same thing for these people that are coming in that are going to work in the oil patch as anybody. And they want things like walking trails, bike trails, fun shopping. They want to make sure that everybody has some type of a community center where they can work out. And by the way, Dickinson and Williston had that, or Dickinson had it in place before the Bakken hit. Williston built theirs during it, but those have been critical. And of course, Watford City has done the same thing. Those are critical to bringing and people in. But the big thing, I think, when it comes to bringing families in, and you talk about quality of life, we've got to have a good K through 12 system. We've got to have good teachers, and we've got to have public safety. And those are challenges, because it costs a lot of money to build new facilities, schools, and that. It costs money to have good teachers. You know, we may have to take a good look at how we pay our educators. We need good math and science teachers, and we're not getting them. They're going to industry. They're going to other areas. And so that's a real challenge for us, to make sure we have an educational force that gets the job done. The second thing that we're dealing with in the state of North Dakota is the drug epidemic, the drug addiction, and it's affecting so many people in so many ways. And so we have our challenges, and we just got to take them head on and try to eliminate some of this this drug addiction and how we handle it, because it's all about public safety. People want to be safe. They want to have their kids go to get a good education, and they want to have a place to, like walking trails, a quality of life that way with nature. And, of course, the other thing that North Dakota has, people, a lot of people like to hunt. We have tremendous hunting opportunities here. So those are some things, and there's more, but those are some of the main things that these young people are looking for.
How much of this has to do with the technology? And where I'm going with this is I read an article in the Wall Street Journal, and they kind of highlighted the East-West Hatfield-McCoy thing, and I thought we were kind of past that, to where the energy industry really highlighted how connected the state really is, from the EERC up in Grand Forks to the university system with NDSU's analytics and IT department, to the western side of the state's ag and energy production, and then of course you got Bismarck with their industries as well. So how much of technology has really created this need for a new quality of life and the new need for the new employee out in the workplace? I'm not here to bring up your age or anything like that, but I'm sure you actually pick up a newspaper and read it still, so you're over 50 years old. But are you following the technology stuff, or is that a little bit too far gone for you, sir?
No, I'm following it. Following, I want you to know that when it comes to the technology, it's critical. When you talked about the EERC, and that for those who don't know, that's the Energy and Environmental Research Center that's at Grand Forks, which is probably the best-kept secret probably in the state of North Dakota. Those of us know what it is, but many people don't have a clue that it's there. They have done a lot of research in helping us get more oil out of the shale. And, when we started, we got probably 5 to 6% of the oil out of the shale. That meant that 94 to 95% of that oil was still in the shale. We now have increased that to 10. Why? Because of research that's being done, not only by the EERC, but also by the individual oil and gas companies. They're out there always trying new things and trying new techniques. And so we're getting more oil out of the shale than we used to. And we will continue to work on technology to do that. And, of course, I would like to mention, when you talk about technology and safety, don't forget the unmanned aircraft, which is being touted and promoted up at UND. That is critical, not only to energy, but it's critical to agriculture. For example, those drones can fly the pipelines. We've had pipeline spills that have created a lot of problems and chaos for us. But if we can spot those things earlier or find out where the leaks are quickly, we will eliminate that environmental disaster before it even happens. So technology is critical in that area. Technology is also critical in the area of agriculture, because they're using these drones to fly the fields, and they can find the insects, they can find disease, they can find where the crops are deficient in certain minerals. It's going to make a big difference in the production. So technology in those two camps is going to move us years and years ahead of where we would have been. And not only that, just out in the oil and gas, we are now producing the gas, a lot of gas with the oil. It's been a problem for us because we got to get it processed. We can't be flaring it, but it has provided a product. And, of course, we have built a lot of gas plants out there that process the gas. But one of the things that's going to be a limiting factor for us is pipelines, where we're moving up on the full capacity of our pipelines to get the gas out of here. So those are challenges. But technology is critical there. Technology, they're looking at new ideas in the coal fired energy industry. For example, the alum cycle, we're looking at that. That is a clean coal burning process in which there is no CO2 that is going to be emitted into the atmosphere. And of course, we're constantly looking for ways to use the CO2 to produce more oil. So technology is at the heart of quality of life. It's at the heart of expanding the industries in energy and agriculture.
And just another way that the Bakken is going to be tying the entire region really together, if not other parts, because so many of these companies are connected from shale play to shale play. You know, when we're talking about, say, like a One Oak or Targa Hess, you know, who recently announced major facilities coming to the Bakken and gas gathering. You've got Meridian with the Davis refinery proposal out there in Belfield. What's happening to the Bakken right now? I think we're going to evolve to that next level pretty soon. Would you mind putting your speculator glasses on for a second and kind of talk a little bit about that next level that we seem to be going? And then if you want, tie it into the importance of the Hub City funding too, because to me, they're connected.
Well, absolutely they're connected. As we look to the future into the Bakken, first of all, there's going to be some drilling, but there's the maintenance of the wells, but we're also going to be going back into the old wells and doing re-stimulation. That's what we're going to be doing, and we're going to increase that 8% recovery, and we're going to change it from 8 to maybe 12, and that's where technology is going to come in. So that's the kind of people you're going to see. We're going to need more engineers and more scientific-type people and geologists out there working. These are people that want to put down roots, and they got to have a place to do that. And that's why hub cities are so critical, because they're the ones that are going to draw the workforce and say, hey, I want to go live in North Dakota. They got a good quality of life. They got a good communities. And I can go out and work in a field that I love to work in and still have a quality of life. So I see the hub cities as critical in helping recruit the workforce that we're going to need for the future as we look at the Bakken, as it changes from just primary drilling, you know, the first drill, to more maintenance and up to remodeling, so to speak, of the wells to go back in and refrack them and redo them. You're going to see a lot more workover rigs out there working than probably drilling rigs in 10 years. But not only the hub cities, I want you to know that there are other smaller communities that are critical too. And for example, the Newtowns, the Kildeers, the Stanleys, the Tiogas, the Belfields, the Watford Cities, the Crosbys, Partials, those communities need to have good quality of life too, and they need to make sure that they are working for that.
Senate Majority Leader Richard Wardner, anything that we left out, anything we want to reiterate, anything that needs to be addressed on the Hub City funding in terms of when it comes to that? Seems to be the triangle of Dickinson, Williston, and Minot?
They're the main ones. And the big thing is that there are those in the legislature that feel that hub cities are done now. We don't need them anymore. But people need to understand when it comes to hub cities that these communities have incurred some debt during this time where we have the fast pickup of the pace of the Bakken, where we had all these people coming in, and they had to get things done. They had to put in infrastructure. So Williston and Dickinson and Minot have debt related to that. The hub city concept and funding of hub cities needs to continue to take care of stranded debt, it will be stranded if we don't have it, and as we go forward, these communities are going to continue to grow. They're going to continue to grow because of what we've talked about, the technology and things that are going to be changing and what's going to happen out in the Bakken. More people are going to want to move into these communities. and we're going to have to take care of them. Schools, law enforcement, those are a couple that we'll have to increase because there will be more people. Fire protection, all of these types of things. So there's going to be what we call gap funding. We need to make sure that we take care of that gap that's going to come because of new people coming faster than normal. And I just want to make my last comment is that when this all started back in the 1950s, the oil tax was taken by the state. And the state said, we will return to the political subs in oil country and in lieu of property tax. That's what this is. This is not a gift to the counties, the cities, the hub cities, the schools, the townships. This is an in lieu of property tax because they cannot property tax the wells and the oil. So that has been a fight that's gone on from the 50s. We are working this biennium for the next session to make it so that it is final. It will not change as far as dollar amount, but we want to make it stable so that everybody knows what they're going to get. So people in the oil patch, they're not talking about the political subs, can plan accordingly. Some people think that the Bakken cities and counties are getting way too much. No, when you think of the hammering they took when this Bakken was going, and it's still going, and there's still demand, they need that revenue to make sure they keep the industry going.
Well, I'll even take it a step further, which, you know, from my perspective, it would be nice to see some balance get done with the population throughout the state. It would be it's happening, but I do think what you're talking about is really needed, because when you take a look at Dickinson and you take a look at Williston and you take a look at Minot, they're growing beyond just energy. I mean, when I think of Minot off the top of my head, you know, yeah, they have the Air Force Base, but United Pulse, the lentils and chickpeas and that group, they're building, or they have on the books at least, they're planning on building a major facility out there, which is going to bring a lot of economic opportunity. And we're talking major economic opportunity, you know, when you talk about a big company like that, because, again, North Dakota is still 14 or 15 crops or ag things we're number one in, from, you know, honey to lentils to dry peas. And you start going out into Williston and you talk about these gas gathering plants, and down in Dickinson, you know, the proposed refinery over there. There's a lot of other growth happening outside of the wells and outside of just the Hesses and the Continental resources of the world. That's what I'm seeing, is that these hub cities are really growing outside of that energy sector. Although the energy sector is the primary pulse behind it, it just seems like it's allowing these other industries really to grow and create some roots from an industry perspective, thus allowing this hub city funding and financing to really make sense. At least that's how I'm seeing it.
Well, I think you're seeing it right. You're seeing it right, absolutely. And I just want to make I got to say, when the oil is produced, and as long as we can take care of the political subs out in the oil patch, remember that the rest of the state does well too. We did put money, a lot of money, into roads out of oil money that went to the eastern, or we'll call them the non-oil counties. They got money for roads too. And I want you to know that some of that oil tax is dedicated to water projects. It's called the Resources Trust Fund. And 20% of the extraction tax goes into that. And that is the Fargo diversion, will be funded from the state part out of that fund. There are water projects all over the state of North Dakota that get money from that. So oil helps the whole state. It's not like only those people out in the oil patch are getting help. They are getting it in other places, too. Another place that I would like to point out is in education. There is 20%, 20% of the extraction tax goes to education, and half of that 20% goes into the Common Schools Trust Fund, which helps fund K-12, not just in the Bakken, across the state. And I want you to understand that the Common Schools Trust Fund is now growing to about $3.7 billion. It generated over $300 million for K-12 funding. Do you think that helps us all? It helps us with our property tax. Absolutely. And if you don't know what the Common Schools Trust Fund was, it started with statehood. That's where they used to put the money for state lands when you rented a school section or state land money went in there. And so it didn't grow very much until when the Bakken hit. It has just taken off because we were putting some of the oil money in there. So schools, water projects, roads have affected the whole state of North Dakota. We're better off with our infrastructure today than we would have been if we had not had the Bakken play.
Senate Majority Leader Richard Wardner, thank you much for your time today, sir.
Well, thank you. You have a good day.